the torpedo.
3-2 pitch, swung on, deep drive, left field, down the line, and looking up, say goodbye. 3-run homer, Anthony Volpe. Home run derby continues here in the Bronx. It's 7-3 Yankees.
Ah, that's right. Fire the torpedoes. I love it. I love it. All right, we're going to get back to your calls. I have a couple of Yankee calls here on the line. We'll get to the Mets after that. As here we are on the Fan at 3:05, 2 hours left. Halfway through our four-hour ride up until 5 o'clock and the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. Talking about that historic weekend of Yankee offense and the cheating scandal that's found its way into the conversation here in the New York sports area as the torpedo bat, which is completely legal, which has been cleared by Major League Baseball, which the Yankees have been open about, which other teams have used already in Major League Baseball. The Boston Red Sox have talked about how they tinkered with it and done it in spring training. Cody Bellinger has openly discussed how he used it in spring training last year against, when he was with the Cubs. But yet somehow this is cheating because the Yankees hit home runs with it. Sorry that the Yankees are smart and figured out a way to help Anthony Volpe. And that's how you know the Yankees are back. Because everybody has to scream foul and cheater just because they hit some home runs against the Milwaukee Brewers. I love it. All right, so quick return to the calls. We'll get through them. We'll get to the Mets and their offensive woes in a tough series to start the year against the Houston Astros. But let's get to Mike in Flatbush. What's up, Mike?
C-Mac, what's going on?
What's up, brother? How are you? You got it.
I'm great. It was a fun weekend. I got home, saw the game with my old man, and it just offense is fun. It is. Pitching duel is great, but it's great to see home runs.
No, there's no doubt about it. The offense is a lot of fun, and this offense in particular, the home runs were crazy, and I have to admit, me and my kids were jumping around. They just could not believe how many home runs the Yankees were hitting and how crazy it was, but I saw a lot of aspects of this lineup that went beyond the home run that really made it exciting. The speed, going first to third on almost any base hit. We saw, we didn't see as many stolen bases because they were hitting so many tandem home runs and were up so big that you were going to limit the stolen bases. But we saw first and second, deep fly ball to center, both runners advancing, leading to, a wild pitch run and a ground ball run. A lot of excitement, a lot of, good at-bats throughout the lineup. Even Peraza got into it and hit a home run. It just felt like the lineup was clicking.
Shout out to, Lenny Lienhart. There's an article in The Athletic about him, the bat guy.
Yep.
And I just want to read a cool quote because he's asked about it, and they say whether he was the inventor of the technology. He said it was a group effort. The results coming from conversations with coaches, players, and MLB and bat makers.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, credit goes to those who take it. But if people want to ascribe credit to different people, then I'll take some cut of it. and I think it's an insane story because evidently, according to the story, it really exploded. I mean, Saturday drew our attention to it, but
yeah,
it exploded over the offseason. And I'm wondering what, if you're a batting coach in professional baseball,
yeah,
you got to be looking at this, or else you're not. Your team's going to say, "Well, what are you doing? You're behind the times." And there was a caller to Melusis earlier today,
yeah,
who referenced Ruth in them and said it's just going back to the old guys. And Melusis poo-pooed it. He said, "No, I have a bat from when I went to where was the bat maker somewhere." I'm drawing a blank.
Louisville, the Slugger.
The warehouse there.
Yeah.
And they had replica models, and I have the Babe Ruth bat, and that, it's like a, it looks like, it's not the whip bat that was in vogue, but it looks like a regular bat. But I think, in my head, I have an image of even the 19th century, when baseball was first invented, that it was a little bit more evenly distributed.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what was taking that caller back. It's amazing because the technology, it's really what they're doing is they're able to zero in on the video and get, I'm sure they're doing computer design where they're seeing each time. And you couldn't do that just with the the eye. You would, you know, someone would know, yeah, I got jammed on this. But what they're using is like, you know, like the image itself, like the video image itself, and overlaying that thousands and thousands of times. And this guy's a genius, and he just thought about it differently, out of the box. Thanks a lot.
See, no, you got, yeah, listen, they were looking at it, and they saw that they tailored. This is not new. Like, we do this in all sports. Golfers tailor their clubs to their swing. Right? That's it. Now, I understand the idea, and Dave Portnoy talked about it, that if you hit it off the label, it means you're not good at baseball. It means you stink. You're not getting your hands through. You're not getting the barrel of the bat to the ball. And so we shouldn't help those hitters by lowering the bat. Okay, whatever you say. We've seen hitters who, you know, who want a more balanced bat. We've seen hitters who want, you know, no knob, big knob. Like, we have seen the hollowing out at the top of the bat. We've seen all innovations, like, to make the bat better. Why this one is striking up, other than the fact that the Yankees hit a ton of home runs, I don't know why. And the Atlanta Braves, apparently, if you listen to Buster Only in Sunday Night Baseball, they put in an order for a bunch of bats. We've seen it been used. Jeffers, the catcher for the Minnesota Twins, had it. I think I saw a Tampa Bay Ray batter had it. Like, the guy now works, the aforementioned MIT guy that we were just talking about, he works with the Marlins right now, so I'm sure the Marlins are going to be using it. Like, it's going around baseball. They are not hiding it. They've run it past Major League Baseball. It has been cleared. The barrel is not bigger than it used to be. The bat can be no wider than a certain specification. This bat follows that. Like, if you look at it, it doesn't even look that different to me. Like, you could see the narrowing at the very top a little bit. And maybe it's a little bit thicker at the label. Like, I don't think, I know that they hit a bunch of home runs. I don't think what we've seen is going to revolutionize baseball, and we're going to see the highest run production and home run totals that we've seen in the history of the game. Like, I still wouldn't expect that. It's a couple of days, and honestly, Nestor Cortez threw fastballs down the middle, and the Yankees had a good swing at it. Let's go to Kevin in Rockland County. What's up, Kev?
Hey, how you doing, Chris?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Great. This weekend's games were unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
The home runs were great. Judge was unbelievable. But when it comes down to the nitty gritty, mm-hmm. the meat of it, when they're in the playoffs, he's only batted 205 in seven seasons in
yes.
the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the pressure's gotten to him with regards to, I've got to get the hit, I've got to get the home run, and not going back to the basics, like, hit the ball to the opposite field. Make contact all the time. With two strikes, get that bat on the ball. I don't see that during the playoff season with this guy. He's got to hit that home run.
Yeah,
I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, again, I know he's 205, but if you look at it, he was hitting so poorly in the last two postseasons that it's brought it down to that. He was a successful player.
He only had four seasons. He's batted below 200 in seven seasons in the playoffs.
No, I understand that. But I'm saying, like, if you look at some of his postseason numbers before 2020, it's like he's never done it, is my point. Like, he's hit home runs in both wild card victories.
Mm-hmm.
He had a series, you know, I'm trying to think. Boston, he had 375 in the ALDS. Boston, he hit 375 in the ALDS. Against Minnesota, he hit 330. Against Houston, he hit 240 that series. He's had, like, other series, 667, that's the wild card game. But, like, he's had other OPSs of in series, 185, 106, 275, 119, 872.
Yeah.
Like, before... Yeah, he was good before 2020. Since then, he's been bad, and he's been so bad. Like, again, he had 17 plate appearances against Houston in the 22 ALCS. He hit .63. He hit .063. So,
exactly.
Like, he hit under 100. But all I'm not trying to tell you he's been a good postseason player. I don't want to say that, because he hasn't.
He's probably one of the worst postseason players the Yankees ever had.
I felt like Alex Rodriguez was even worse until he did it in 2009. But he's definitely, I mean, he's been awful the last two, and it's been so bad that it drags it all down.
apparently he has a higher career OPS than Mookie Betts in the postseason.
Yeah. So, I mean, his OP, yeah, again, his OPS in the postseason is 768. That is not, like, god-awful. It's not Aaron Judge. It's not good enough if you want to win championships. But it's, let's see what Mookie Betts is. Now, I know Mookie Betts, obviously, has won three championships. One with the Red Sox and two with the Dodgers. Yeah, if you count 2020. Now, I know he went on a stretch after the 2020 playoffs where he was miserable in the playoffs and the Dodgers kept losing in the playoffs to lesser teams and he was miserable. So postseason batting, his OPS is 762. So yes, in a career postseason, his batting average is 60 points higher, but his OPS is 6 points lower. So, I mean, could you argue, now he's won championships, but could you argue like they're relatively, now the K rate is really the issue with Judge. Judge has struck out so many times. Like Mookie Betts has played, he has played in 74 postseason games. Judge has played in 58. So he's played in more postseason games. And he has struck out in those games 54 times in 74. Judge has struck out 86 in 58. The strikeouts are the glaring difference. Judge's strikeout rate in the postseason is crazy.
And I think he had the record for the most strikeouts in a single postseason.
And he had the record for the most strikeouts in a, I believe that's the case. In 2000, he struck out 20 times in the postseason this year. In 2024, last year, he struck out 20 times. That's a lot of strikeouts in, you know, how many games played? 14 games, and he struck out 20 times. That's a lot. There's no doubt. I'm not trying to say he's a good postseason player, but Mookie Betts is very, like, Mookie Betts was terrible outside of, like, Mookie Betts postseason series, right? In 2016, he had 200.
Think about how bad Otani was just last
in the World Series.
In the World Series, he was terrible.
Yeah, in the World, but he got hurt. But yes, and he was good in the other series. But yes, I don't disagree. But 2016 in the ALDS, 200. Then he hit 300 in 2018, right? In 2018, the ALDS, when they won the World Series, in 2018, his OPS, forget batting average, I know everyone's hung up on it, but in 2018, when they won the World Series, the Boston Red Sox, his OPS against the Yankees in the ALDS was 566. His OPS against the Houston Astros in the ALCS was 584, and his OPS in the World Series was 699. So, I mean, he had other players carry him. That was an incredible Red Sox team that went through the postseason like a hot knife through butter. Steve Pierce won the World Series MVP. Bradley Jr. had an incredible postseason run.
Wasn't Eovaldi also on that team?
Nathan Eovaldi was incredible pitching. Yeah, no, they were just a great postseason team. And Mookie Betts wasn't very good, but they won a championship, so no one cares. 2020. He had a good 2020 for the most part. He had a lousy series against Atlanta, but besides that, had a good 2020. Then in 2021, he had a miserable NLCS that they lost, where he had an OPS of 514. In 2022, an OPS of 492 when they lost to the Padres. They got, in 2023, they got swept by the Arizona Diamondbacks. He had an OPS of .083. He hit zero in the series. He was 0-for-11. 0-for-11 with one walk in the NLDS where they got swept by the Diamondbacks. He's had terrible postseasons. Nobody views him as a bad postseason player. He's won three championships. He wasn't a force for the 18 team, even though he had a great regular season that year. He wasn't a force for them in the postseason. And he had some miserable series that allowed a team. Now, again, they won championships, and I'm not trying to dismiss his Judge's poor play. But the New York Yankees have never lost a series like the Dodgers losing to the Arizona Diamondbacks, getting swept in the NLDS when they won, what, that year? 107 games, 106 games, and they lost to the Arizona Diamondbacks in three straight, and he went 0-for-11? Like, sometimes it's the players around you, and he was a better offensive player in the early part of his postseason career. I will say this. Judge was an average to slight, you know, was an average to slightly above average postseason player. He wasn't as good as he was in the regular season, but he was a serviceable, pretty darn good postseason player up until 2020. So that's half. And even that year, he was okay. It's 22 and 24, and they were so bad. So bad. And he struck out so many times in those two postseasons that it's clouded everybody's judgment and it's overshadowed all of his numbers prior. That's how bad he was. And I'm not trying to say, and again, awful. And maybe it was that he had the 62 home run season and he felt like he had to carry the team, or maybe he was just exhausted after the chase. That explains away 22. Fine. There's no explanation for last year.
Being exhausted by the time you get to the end of the year and the Dodgers, do you think the fact that they started the season 2 weeks before everyone last year and then played as long as anyone, and now they start the season again 2 weeks early this year, do you think that affects them later in the season, or are they just so loaded that
they're just so loaded and have so much depth, I don't think it will, and they had some time, and you know, they've won all these games, and I'd be surprised if they felt like they were getting tired. I think they're probably going to have enough room in the division to give guys a break, but maybe. We've seen that before, and again, no, we haven't seen a repeat championship, repeat World Series championship since 2000. The Yankees are the last team to repeat as World Series champs, so the odds are that the Dodgers won't in some way, but they are just so freaking loaded. And Mookie Betts, unbelievable. Since we're talking about him, the guy lost, what, 25 pounds?
That's what they said, yeah.
He says his body is eating itself. He can't keep anything down. And now I guess he's over it. He shows up 20 pounds light, and he's hitting game-winning home runs. And like, it's unbelievable. He's a great player,
too. The way he was talking about it last week, I thought we weren't going to see him until mid-April.
I know. I turned on the game the other day against Detroit, and I'm like, he's playing? I thought he was
exactly.
gone forever.
And
now
is he
forever.
Playing? He's hitting walk-off home runs.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Away we go, Chris.
Away we go. Do you enjoy the weekend, Stu?
Oh, I was watching every ball take off, and I said, now that's more like it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pleasure to watch. I mean, but, you know, it's they were very, very... Oh, the defense on Saturday was like, oh, my God, what? Everybody forgot how to... But so, who's that guy's name at third base?
Pablo Reyes.
Excuse me.
No, I know it's one game, but here's the thing I'll say about it, because I understand the pushback. I do, and it was only spring training. But like, we talk about accountability, and we want like players to be rewarded for good play, and you know, a hot guy, or whatever. The guy mashed in spring training and killed left-handed pitching in particular. And the Yankees weren't sure about their left hand. They didn't. They had short right-handed bats. They gave a guy a chance because he killed it in spring, right? I thought we want accountability. I thought we want to believe in
exactly.
Hot. I thought we want to give guys a chance. So, like, it didn't work out, and I doubt he'll play third base again. But, like, people are so
and
mad about Pablo
still be
Reyes.
On the team because of his bat.
Yeah.
He can hit. And the third base is
still an issue.
Third.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's going to be the guy, and thank you for the call, Stu. And we could see some more of Oswald Peraza, but like right now, and if you see, I've read a couple of things about. I wasn't going to bring this up today, but I can. If you look at Nolan Arenado, who's off to a fairly good start, hit a home run. They're saying his bat speed is up. They're saying he's swinging the bat harder and faster than he has in a while, and he's trying some new things, and so far paying off. At any point they could pull that trade. St. Louis is going to be willing to deal him at any point. They need another right-handed bat. It solves an issue. You can get rid of Peraza. Oswaldo Cabrera is now your utility infielder. He can switch hit. He can play the outfield. He can play the infield. Like, it's perfect. They should absolutely go trade for Nolan Arenado. Why they won't, I don't know. But I believe he's off to a good start. Let me just double check that, because I know he hit a home run, and I read an article that he's swinging the bat harder in spring training and early on in the year. So right now he's hitting .455. He's got a .538 on base percentage. I'm looking at it. Thank you. I love busting his shoes. So right now in the three games they've played, assuming this is up to date, I don't know if they've played four, but so far early on in the year, three games, Nolan Arenado is hitting .455 with a .538 on base percentage. He's slugging .908, which is an OPS of 1.4. 1.448 in three games. I mean, that's what I'm talking about. Let's go. Why is Nolan Arenado not a Yankee? Let's go. Because, yes, they had a great weekend. But there is no doubt they still need a third baseman. And defensively, he's still great. Like, he solves all the problems. They need another veteran right-handed bat. They need to solve third base. They want to make sure they're good defensively there, especially with, you know, Rodon and Max Fried in particular on the mound. And even Stroman, who creates so much contact and is a soft thrower. Like, it just answers too many freaking questions to not pull off this trade. Go get it done. And don't tell me you'll do it at the trade deadline, because if he continues this, you know how many teams are going to be up for Nolan Arenado? Right now, you might be able to get him for a salary dump where nobody else wants him. He has a great first half. Suddenly, he's everybody's, you know, ideal candidate at the trade deadline. Then you got to compete, and the Yankees don't have the farm system to compete. Jake in Ledgewood. What's up, Jake?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you, buddy?
So let's carry on with the whole Nolan Arenado deal. That guy, he's getting older now, but he's one of the best third basemen in the league.
No,
defensively, at least.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, he's on his way to the Hall of Fame. That's how good Nolan Arenado's been. But, you know, last year was a down year for him. He only had 16 home runs, drove in 71 runs, and had an OPS of .719. Those are way down from his typical seasons. And when you're at 34 years old, which he is now, people will think that is the beginning of the decline.
That's kind of the deal. I mean, he's one of my favorite players, but, I mean, the guy, he's put up the stats through the years. So, you know, you gotta still give him, he's still a good player. You know what I mean?
I think so, but there's a lot of people who don't, and the Yankees would have to eat some money. And right now they don't seem to want to do that and put that on the payroll, despite the idea of how much money they've gotten for allowing the Rays to use the stadium and how much money they're going to get from insurance and Garrett Cole's injury. There's like a bunch of reasons why the New York Yankees should be more than willing to go trade for Nolan Arenado and take on the money, and they don't seem to be willing. So yes, if we're going to have a conversation about the Yankees, the weekend was great. I'm not letting that overshadow the weekend and how much fun it was. And listen, do I mind letting Oswaldo Cabrera play or letting see what Peraza is? Not really. Not if everyone else on the team is going to mash, then no, I don't have a problem with it. But right now, there's no doubt. Again, three games in, much like the Yankee season. But in three games, Nolan Arenado has gotten off to an incredible start. Doesn't mean he'll continue it. He might not get another hit all year. But for me, I've been saying it forever, and there's no reason not to keep saying it. Nolan Arenado should be on this team. El Shorty in the Bronx. What's up, El?
My brother. Hello.
What's up, man? How are you? Yep.
D-Mac.
Yes, sir.
Listen, baseball is back, man. Baseball
is most definitely back, and so are the evil empire New York Yankees.
For real. But listen, man, before I start, I just want to say we got to make a GoFundMe. We got to make a GoFundMe because my boy C-Mac can't be out here driving with a 4-1 tires as a grown-ass man. So let's get that done, all right, man?
I got it fixed, man, but you want to open up a...
Oh, God bless you then, man.
Yeah. When did I... Yeah, no, yeah. I was talking about I had to pay for them.
I know. Listen.
Yeah.
It's life, man. It's life, brother.
I know it's life, man. You ain't kidding. But yeah, if you want to start a GoFundMe page for C-Mac, go ahead. I'm just kidding. Don't do that. But I took care of the tires. I was complaining about how much it cost, and I got hit with back-to-back, my car and my wife's car, within the span of a month, 4 new tires. That was not fun. That was not fun. That will ruin your weekend. So I had to deal with that. But yes, I thought you were going to bring up getting yelled at in the street by Boomer Esiason, which again, I just want to point, and I was half asleep driving and up the roads or whatever, and I'm not going to yell at him. I just wanted to get on and give my one point about he talked about it being like a parking lot. I'm not at Roosevelt Field. This is not Walmart in the middle of the afternoon. It's on the street in the middle of the morning. If you haven't heard, Boomer like screamed at me in the street on Friday morning as I got out of my car, or I got into my car and didn't pull out immediately, I guess, as he was waiting to park the car. And he just started screaming. But the best part is, and I wish I would have said this when I called in to complain about it, He literally admitted it was 90 seconds. Like, 90 seconds. So, from the moment I got into my car until there was a madman screaming at me in the street, that took 90 seconds. 90 seconds! It's not like I was there for 5 minutes. 90 seconds, and I was getting screamed at. And I honestly thought, and I told him this, I honestly thought he was half kidding with me. Like, I understood that he wanted me to actually leave. It wasn't like it was, I knew he wanted me to go, and he was yelling at me to leave. But it was so ridiculous that he was screaming at me that I honestly thought he was doing it in jest. Like, I thought it was like a joke. Ah, would you just get that? Like, I thought he was being somewhat playful. I did not think he was actually that angry. Because it's so ridiculous to be that angry for 90 seconds when there was an open spot right behind me. And when he says parallel park, he didn't have to parallel park. He could have pulled into that thing and then, like, had to back up to straighten out. But it was, he had 35 feet behind me. So that was a fun morning. It's just one of those surreal moments, you know? It's like in the span of a week, I was in a fantasy draft with Tiki Barber and I was getting screamed at by Boomer Esiason. Like, if you would have told me that when I was just getting into this business.
I got to go to work. You got to go home. Move your ass and let's go.
I get it's frustrating. But I have to, like, and then, like, CeeLo's like, oh, well, once you started honking. He's like 2-3 car lengths behind me on the streets of Manhattan on a street where the parking is illegal. Like, the only reason why I'm allowed to park there is it's the middle of the morning. You know, that spot does not stay legal all day. Like, I didn't know who was beeping for what reason. It's like if he would have pulled up alongside me and given me the point, like, let's go, okay. I just hear honking. I'm like, all right, what could it be? Then I heard a couple honks. I put it in reverse. And when I put it in reverse, I saw that there was like a football field behind me of open space. So I said, he can't be looking for me. And then all of a sudden I heard the yelling. It was very funny. I did not, and I'm sorry, but look, and it's not like a parking lot. It's not like I get into my car, I see the car waiting, and then you take forever. I hate those people too. Don't get me wrong. I've been frustrated many a time waiting in a parking lot. They get into the car. Oh, good, we got a spot. In a busy parking lot, and then people take forever. Like, you're in a busy parking lot, you know. Like, let me get out of here so people can have this spot. That's not a busy parking lot. It's an empty street at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I'm moving slow anyway. Let's pick it up, all right?
And then, of course, yeah. I'm wearing a bed sheet and all the other stuff. Boomer, I'm fat, okay? We get it. Good Lord. He was really yelling. I figured he was just being funny. Like, you know, I really didn't think he was that serious. But then he talked about it in the morning, and he was serious. It happens. I definitely did delay. I'm not going to deny that. I didn't get into my car and drive out right away. And then the other thing, yeah, I said why. Sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes, and especially off the opening day, 5-hour show, I had a specific part of my show that I wanted to go back and listen to. And it's not because I'm narcissistic, as I was accused of. It was because I'm trying to get better. Like, I go back and I listen and I critique myself and I think, all right, next time I wouldn't do that or how would I handle this? Like, every once in a while, I'll go back and on the car ride home, I will listen to my show to listen to it and try to improve and get better because that's what this is about. I'm trying to get better. I'm not perfect. So I was like in the car and I was like going through the Odyssey app and I was trying to remember exactly what time was the segment I was talking about. And I was like, you know, they also get a catalog. So I'm reading what it was. So it took a minute like while I was sitting in my car. And he even admitted it was 90 seconds. It was 90 seconds from when I sauntered my fat ass in my Yankee sheet into my car to when I had
Is that jersey you wore?
When I had a madman screaming at me, it was 90 seconds from closing the door to screams. I think that's a bit short. No, but I did sit there. There's no doubt. I won't deny it. I was sitting in there, and it was probably about 90 seconds to 2 minutes, maybe. And then I have to admit also, since I'm being honest, I thought he told the story exactly right. I just think he thinks what's okay is not okay necessarily, or that he's right in the argument, but he was 100% accurate with every piece of information he gave, because then I did put it in reverse, and when I saw how much space I had behind me, I literally assumed it's not about my parking spot. So I put it back into park, or I might have just, you know, put my foot on the, held my foot on the brake or something. I don't remember, but I definitely did put it in reverse and then not even pull out very quickly after that. So that is fair. I'll give him that. I did. If he was really in a rush and was waiting for me to go, I gave him the fake out with putting it in reverse and not leaving. That is fair. Dave in Wanta wants to talk about it. What's up, Dave?
Yeah, what's up, Chris? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you?
Good, man. Listen, I'm on your side. I work similar hours than you. You know, it varies. Sometimes I work 9 p.m., 5 a.m., sometimes 10 to 6. You know, forget you trying to, you know, find your station, whatever, to still listen to your own show. That's no issue. But, like, sometimes when I get in my car, I need, you know, a few minutes to decompress before I drive because I'm tired.
That's,
you know,
hours. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. It's the middle of the morning. I'm exhausted. That's like the end of my day, literally. I'm going to go home and go to sleep. Oh, I got to take care of the kids a little bit. But, like, and it's an hour and 20-minute drive for me. So, like, sometimes I decompress. Sometimes I rub my eyes. Sometimes I, you know, just, you know, sit there for a minute. But in this particular case, I was scrolling through my phone to find a portion of the program I did want to listen back to. And yeah, I mean, I'm just not thinking of it as a parking spot because the spot does become illegal within like an hour of me sitting there. And I just, I mean, I heard the honks and I even looked, but it was like the car was like two car lengths behind me, right in the middle. I thought they were honking at someone to like come out, or I don't know. I didn't think it was for me. I just didn't.
But it's a lack of self-awareness.
That's fair. I guess that's fair because I wasn't aware that I did not have an awareness that he was looking for that spot. I didn't. But again, it was 90 seconds. And you could just drive up and say, hey, are you leaving? And give me the look. And I'll go, oh, okay.
All right. Well, now you know.
Now I know. Oh, boy. It happens. But immediately, like to me, when he was talking about it, and then he said, you know, like when you're in a Whole Foods parking lot. No, I've never shopped at Whole Foods, but yeah.
He said Whole Foods or Citarella.
Citarella. Yeah, where else? Yeah. You know, like when you're sitting in the parking lot of Tiffany's, or you know when you're, you know.
Gave me a great opportunity, though, to work on my Photoshop skills for the YouTube thumbnail.
Thank you.
I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, no, it was very good. It was a good video. But yeah. It wasn't a parking lot in the middle of the day. You weren't sitting there waiting for the spot, obviously.
Where was it? It was by all the UPS?
Yeah, it's right out front.
Oh, right out front.
Right out front.
Those aren't legal spots, though.
That's what I said.
You did say that.
Yeah, the spot's legal in the middle of the morning.
Obviously.
I have no idea what he does, and that's not my business.
And he doesn't pay.
I don't know about any of that. All I know is he wanted to pull up and take the spot I had. But yes, the spot becomes illegal. So, like, I don't.
It becomes illegal at 7.
At 7. So, an hour and 45 minutes from when I was in the car. So, that's I just didn't think of it as a parking spot.
And I was here. He did not go down in the middle of the show to move his car.
That's neither here nor there. I don't. He was looking for the spot, clearly. It's fine. I just didn't think of it at 5:15 in the morning. 888-808-109. But it made for good radio, and, you know, I got made fun of again. That's okay. And I honestly thought it was in good. I thought he was giving me, like, a good-natured, like, kind of, oh, why would you just go? Like, I thought he was kind of having fun with me a little bit. I did not think he was that angry, but apparently he was. And I did yell back, by the way. I didn't shrink in fear. I rolled down the window. I said, what the hell are you yelling at me for? I think I said, don't be all pissy. The Mets lost. I think that's what I said. Not that would even make him pissy. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you, but we will talk about those Mets and why I think, even with the losses, I think it's not that hard to take a positive feeling out of this series against the Astros. We do have to worry about Lindor, and now this series against Miami, I know there's not a lot of must-wins this time of the year. You do not want to lose the first series of the year with this team, with the expectations, and then roll right into a lousy Miami team and not find your way. So we'll get to that next. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Quick break. Back with more after this.
Just move your ass and get the hell out of here and go home.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Talked a lot about the Yankees. We'll get to the Mets. Talked a little bit about the Mets earlier, but obviously, a weekend where the offense just didn't show up. And unfortunately for Met fans, it's a common theme early on in the season. Lindor is still hitless. on the season. He's been brutal to start. Drew a walk, that's about it. He's been brutal to start. Obviously, really the entire lineup other than Soto. Soto's the only one who's done anything offensively. And, I mean, really just nothing. They got one hit on Saturday, and the one hit was Soto hitting a fly ball to left field where it went off the wall of the Crawford boxes. And, honestly, a normal-sized left fielder might have been able to make the catch. Like, they were that close from being one hit. But I'll tell you why. And I feel pretty strongly about this, why I'm not overly concerned about this series loss and why actually I feel pretty good about it, as good as you can feel about losing an opening series on the road. I trust this offense. I know Lindor has gotten off slow. It's been his history with the New York Mets. I fully expect him. Now, look, do I think he's going to be as good as he was last year? I don't know. He was incredible last year, you know, in a normal year without Ohtani being a superhero. You know, he's right there for the MVP. He had an incredible year, an incredible clutch year, all of it. We all know the meeting to the leadoff, to moving him to leadoff, the whole bit, and how incredible, all the clutch hits, the home runs, you know, the first game of the doubleheader to end the season against the Braves, the home run against Philadelphia in the NLDS, all of it, just an incredible year. And as bad as he's been, I have confidence he's going to figure it out. Pete Alonso, I don't know what he's going to hit, but he's going to hit home runs. Vientos has gotten off to a miserable start, hitting under 100. Nimmo's hitting 182. Winker's hitting 167. You know, Beatty hasn't gotten a hit yet, and we'll talk about Beatty. Siri scores the one run on pretty much stealing home. So the offense was completely inept this entire series. And as frustrating as that is, and as common practice as it is this early in the year, and how frustrating it is when you expected the offense to make a big jump, and listen, it's 3 days, it still can. And that's my point. I trust this offense. Right? Last year, they were as good as anybody for a stretch. They had as many good hitters in that lineup, and above 700 OPS, above average Major League Baseball hitters in that lineup as anybody. Juan Soto has gotten off to a great start, obviously. His OPS is 1.3. He's on base two or three times every single game. He got the one hit on Saturday, hits the monster home run in the win on Friday. And ultimately, I believe in Vientos. Ultimately, I believe in Alonso. I believe in Soto. I believe in Lindor. I believe in this lineup. I do. So even though it's gotten off to a slow start, and we have seen it before, we've also seen them figure it out and be a dynamic offense, and I expect that. So leaving this series, I can deal with a bad series from the strength of the team. What scares me is the rotation and the pitching, and I thought they had an incredible series. I'll be totally honest with you. Like, yeah, I talked about it after opening day. You know, Holmes wasn't great on opening day. I don't think he was terrible. He didn't have his sinker, and he's learning how to be a starting pitcher, whether it's just as simple as his routine between innings or his pitch mix and when to throw that changeup. Like, it's one thing to work on it in spring training, knowing it doesn't matter if it gets hit 500 feet, it's spring training. It's another when the game is on the line and you're in competition and it's the real game. This guy's a reliever for the last 6 years of his career. He's thrown two pitches when it matters most, when he needs big outs, when he's got runners on, when he's trying to get through, he's trying to get a double play. He's got a sweeper, he's got a sinker. That's it. And what we've seen from him as a Yankee was when the sinker isn't located, he could have real trouble. So you saw him not be able to throw the sinker early on, try and rely on the slider, try and continue to find the sinker, and not trust the new kick change and some other things he's been working on because he doesn't have any memory stockpiled in his brain where he's gotten out of jams with that pitch. Like, it's going to take some time, but overall, as wild as he was, let's be honest, he only gives up two runs if Acuna doesn't throw the double play ball away, and you live with it, and the bullpen came in and did a good job, and then, you know, what you saw from McGill, who I thought deserved to be in the starting rotation, despite being able to be sent down and to have those options, and then clearly when, you know, Blackburn comes up with the knee injury, it made it easy. But McGill, as long as he throws strikes, man, he throws 98 miles an hour. He's got good stuff. Like, he's been up and down, but a lot of the issues with him is that he doesn't trust it. And he doesn't fill up the zone enough. But when he does, he could be devastating. He pitched really well. They came in and got big outs for him. Diaz looked as good. Diaz was throwing harder than what we've seen in spring, and that was an issue for him. We were worried about his velocity in spring, but he came out and he really threw hard. He looked as dominant and had an easy 1-2-3 inning to save that game. And that's, he's so important to this team and that bullpen. And, you know, if he's not a great player at the back end of that bullpen, if he's not what he was a couple years ago, that bullpen's not as good. I mean, it just isn't. That's what they're relying on. Like, the rest of the pieces, Minter had a good outing. Like, we've seen who came in? Buddo came in and did a good job. Kranick on Saturday came in an impossible situation and got out of a bases-loaded jam. Like, this pitching staff did really good, but that bullpen, as good as some of these names are and as good as Buddo's been, like, without Diaz as the anchor, I don't know how it sustains itself. So to see him look as good as he looked, that was impressive. And again, we saw really good starting pitching. So for me, the same thing. What I'm concerned about with this team is the starting pitching. I'm not concerned about the offense. Now, we'll see. 3 weeks, slow. Like, we've seen these guys get off the slow starts, and eventually I'll be concerned about the offense. And again, it's got to be the driving force of the team, because as much as I'm telling you that the starting rotation's been good and what they did last year and how great it was in the second half, and you trust this pitching lab and they've seen things from, you know, I was listening to Evan a little bit and he was talking about the pitch selection that Griffin Canning was using, and he upped his slider where he was throwing it like 15% last year and he upped it to over 50% in this start. So the Mets are very good at, you know, finding what works. They do have that pitching lab. They've gotten the most out of these starting pitchers. It looks like they found that with Griffin Canning, who's had a great spring and a good start yesterday, or Saturday rather. So, like, as positive as I am about the pitching, I do think this team needs to be run through the offense. And that's because I think it's their best unit. And I'm not going to overreact to a bad 3 days against a team that, honestly, you know, can pitch. Framber Valdez is a very good pitcher. Hunter Brown, you know, last year in the second half was one of the best pitchers in the American League. I mean, Arrighetti, who pitched on Saturday, not necessarily one of the better pitchers, but they won hit him. But ultimately, I believe in the offense. I think they're going to score a ton of runs. I think Soto's going to make a world of difference. He already has. He's gotten off to a good start when nobody else has. And that's what's funny. You know, if you want to play this Yankee Met thing, what's funny is right now it feels like they have one. They got one good hitter and the rest of the lineup's a bunch of bums, which is what we heard about from the for the Yankees all year last year. But obviously, it's three games. Lindor's going to come around. Alonso's going to hit a lot of home runs. You know, Nimmo is still kind of coming back from the knee and everything. But I expect Vientos to be good. The question is really, you know, Beatty, who I've been pushing for to be this everyday second baseman. And I still feel that way. I want to give him this full month with the injury and with McNeil, and let him have some time to establish himself. But, like, already, like, I don't know how long the leash is going to be on Beatty. And if Acuña is going to give you good at-bats like he gave you the other day, and he's going to play, you know, really good defense, despite that error, he played very good defense, made a diving stop. Beatty, I don't know how long the leash is, but I would love to see Beatty get a real run. But right now, you know, I don't know how much of a run they'll give him. And he has not proven anything at the major league level. But other than that, and obviously they're dealing with Alvarez missing time, and Torrens has actually gotten off to a pretty good start. He's hitting .286 in the first couple games of the year. But I believe in the Mets offense, and I'm not overly worried about it. What scares me is the pitching, and I thought you got overall, despite not being that effective for Clay Holmes, I thought it was, you know, to get his feet wet as a starting pitcher, I don't think it was awful. He limited the damage for the most part, and Griffin Canning gave you a great start, and McGill was even better than that. So for me, even though they lost a couple of hard-fought games, even though they didn't score any runs and with one hit on Saturday, I still feel like it was an overall, for as much as you can take positives out of losing a series, I think the starting pitching by the Mets really speaks louder than the offense struggling, because I don't expect that. And I'm big on your strengths being your strengths. It's three games. It's early on in the year, and Lindor has this, like, nature of getting off to these slow starts, and I don't know what it is. And if you look at it, he had another miserable spring. I don't believe he hit a home run in spring training. Not that he's necessarily a home run hitter, although he does hit some home runs, but I wouldn't view him as such. But I mean, the guy gets off to these miserable starts, and eventually it's going to come back to bite him. Eventually, I mean, that's why you get Juan Soto, though, to make up for it. But I do think this offense is going to be good. Maybe they need a couple of torpedo bats thrown in the mix. I don't know. But we've seen it before, and then they figure it out. To me, as long as they get good starting pitching and Diaz is Diaz, which is what they got in this series, I think that bodes very well for them. Now, having said that, having said not to worry about that series and to talk about the starting pitching, I have to admit now you get ready for a Miami team who had three walk-off victories to start the year, and they are throwing on Tuesday Sanga making his first start of the year along going up against Sandy Alcantara. That's, I mean, you don't want to lose this series now, because then it starts to spiral, because there is so much anticipation for this team. There is so much high expectations. This is supposed to be the year, right? They've their big brother. They've taken over the town. They've taken over the city. They're going to be the team to go to. You got, you know, Nimmo making such a declaration, and as according to Evan, declaring war on the New York Yankees and the city, and, you know, a lot of expectations with Juan Soto. And if you get shut down now by, you know, Cal Quantrill, Peterson and Quantrill, we'll see Peterson's first start of the year after having an incredible spring and a great second half, and see if he can keep up with the Mets' trend of really good starting pitching here to start the year. But that's a game you have to win. Then you get to Sanga and Alcantara, who, you know, hasn't pitched in a long time, but opening day looked like he had his good stuff. Didn't go deep into the game, but who knows what Sanga's going to give you. And then you get Clay Holmes back on Wednesday. This is a series you want to win. You do not want to start the year losing two series, and especially to a team like Miami that is, you know, looks completely different and really is supposed to be the dregs of the division and the National League. So as much as I'll tell you I don't mind losing two out of three to Houston, I do believe the offense will rebound. I believe Lindor will be Lindor. I think the starting pitching and Edwin Diaz were the two most positive things coming out of that, and probably more important than anything else other than victories. I understand that, but those are two really important things. Griffin Canning, McGill, Holmes, the rest of the bullpen. Minter had a good inning. You know, they had a really good pitching series against the team that can hit a little bit. I mean, obviously they're down a little bit. They lost Tucker. They've lost some guys, but they still have Alvarez, who clearly that was the talking point of that game. What Mendoza allowed Griffin Canning to face Alvarez in that spot, which I don't mind at all. You know, you got to try and early on like this, you want to find out what Griffin Canning can do. You want to find out who he is. And I don't know if you had a better option. You can go young there. Like, I don't know where you're going to go to get out Alvarez. He's an incredible hitter, and they were able to keep him down for the most part in the series. But other than that one choice where it's the manager trusting a starting pitcher, which we've seen from Mendoza all of last year, like, I really felt like the Mets had a pretty good series pitching-wise, and I trust the offense to bounce back. 888-808-1019, but they better not fall on their face against Miami. That will be a problem.
Well, the good news is Alcantara, when he struggles, is he gives up a lot of walks, and Juan Soto loves to walk.
There you go. Juan Soto loves to walk, unless he's swinging at sliders in the other batter's box. 888-808. Did I say that? I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. Cheap shot. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. Quick break. We'll come back. Say good morning and take you to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show. McMonagle here with you on the Fan.